welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. Going to have a little bit of a longer show today, but I think you'll find it, every minute of it, interesting. Right here in North Carolina, a gentleman was handcuffed, arrested, had guns drawn on him by law enforcement, and you're saying, oh my gosh, Mark, what was he? Was he a terrorist? Was he someone who was engaged in some type of violent activity? He was sending emails. Sending emails. In 2016, 2017, our fine state has come to the point where if you're sending emails and somebody doesn't like it, by the way, it was about transgenderism. And so maybe that explains some of this. The folks receiving the information from the citizen of North Carolina didn't like it. They found it to be annoying, and they got a cease and desist order, which he, I guess, did not comply with, and suddenly found himself arrested. Again, not for sending anything threatening, not for committing any act of violence, but simply because he exercised his constitutionally guaranteed right to freedom of speech. And I'm going to get out of the way. It's kind of a lengthy story, but I found it fascinating and a little scary, frankly, that this happened here in North Carolina. Joining us now, a return engagement. You might recall Napier Fuller was on our program several months ago talking about an ethics situation with, at the time, Representative Chris Segro. And Napier Fuller, welcome back to What Matters in North Carolina.
Cheers. Thanks, Mark. And to follow up on that previous conversation, I still have not received any of the public information request I've made regarding Representative Chris Segro's time in the NCGA. I'm still waiting for those records. I wonder if I will ever get them.
I think that what I've noticed is that oftentimes ethics complaints just go into some type of black hole. We never seem to ever hear. There were several filed over the last couple of years that I have not heard anything about, including the one that you filed. So I think there's just this ether that ethics complaints go into, never to be heard from again.
Right, right.
So it's not really with great pleasure that you're doing this interview on What Matters in North Carolina, because you've found yourself in a situation that, frankly, is pretty bizarre here in America. And freedom of speech, I guess, isn't exactly freedom of speech to some people. I'll let you tell the broad strokes of your story, and then we'll go from there.
Yes, yes. So I live and work in Wilmington, North Carolina. On February 2nd, I was in New Hanover County going to a business meeting. I work in real estate development. I'm a graduate of the MIT School of Architecture and do a lot of design and urban development. And was meeting with some of my clients on a property that I own, a warehouse distribution facility, and was arrested in front of my clients and with five different New Hanover County Sheriff's patrol vehicles, and it was a pretty big deal. We were arrested at gunpoint and taken to the New Hanover County Jail. And
now, wait a minute. Let me stop you right there. Five sheriff's vehicles.
That is correct.
Guns drawn.
Yes.
And so, you know, did they think you had masterminded a terrorist plot or released some chemical into the air?
It's not clear. And to be fair to the sheriff, when they are fulfilling an arrest warrant from another county, they really don't know any of the details of what's going on.
Okay.
And Orange County, the University of North Carolina, had filed two charges of cyber stalking, and typically the case law of that in this state is almost exclusively related to domestic violence situations.
Okay. So maybe it wasn't as odd as it sounds. It does sound a little overdone, but then again, I'm not in law enforcement, so maybe that was within, you know, normal procedure. So I'm sorry to interrupt, but that just sounded a little extreme. So here you are, you're in front of clients,
right?
And suddenly you've got guns being pointed at you. I'm sure that made you feel a little strange.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, my adrenaline was going, my heart was racing. Yeah, it was very upsetting, as one can imagine. And, you know, I was photographed, you know, mugshots released to the press, all that sort of stuff. But the case turns out it was the University of North Carolina had brought the arrest warrants based upon a statute known as the North Carolina Cyber Stalker statute, and they brought this on, I think the exact phrase would be harassing communications, repeatedly communicating messages by email that are considered, quote, annoying and harassing.
Okay, so not threatening and not,
not
engendering fear, but just annoying.
Just annoying and harassing.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, I mean, we could stop right here, Napier, and I could tell you that that sounds pretty bizarre. But so they – well, continue. What were you sending to the University of North Carolina that they found?
I'm a former member of the executive committee for the New Hanover County GOP. I've run for office before, and I'm very involved in church advocacy. I'm a convert to the Roman Catholic Church and have been very involved in the HB2 debates. And so I had sent a lot of emails to the members of the NCGA, and they're quite well-reasoned, you know, nice emails. And so I had decided to sort of recycle some of those by sending them to some of the people I had identified at UNC as being major proponents of the HB2 repeal campaign. And specifically, there had been a 17-page petition to the NCGA signed by a lot of top professors at UNC. And so I'd used that document to establish an email list of people to contact, expressing the Roman Catholic Church's views own transgendered ideology, which is not favorable, as one could imagine.
Yeah. So you compile an email list, and you've got some information that you have extracted and put together from the Roman Catholics' views on transgenderism, and you begin to, I guess, send these emails to folks?
Yes, yeah. And as my attorneys would want to make very clear, that these people that I contacted at UNC were state employees and had already been publicly involved in the HB2 repeal debate.
Okay.
In other words, these were not private citizens that, you know, I'm going around and, you know, grabbing off the street. These are public players in this debate. And obviously, if someone has a position as a professor at UNC and they are petitioning the NCGA based upon that title, it changes the character of that conversation. It certainly adds a lot of gravitas, one would say. And so I am someone that studied at Washington University with the, I don't know if you've heard of the Masters in Johnson, you know, Research Institute into Human Sexuality, but I did take a year of course in that as an undergraduate. And so I would say, you know, that I do have some formal training,
okay,
in human sexuality from a clinical standpoint, as well as the theological perspective. So I was someone that could easily counter some of these arguments that were being made, and that's what I did starting in mid-December with these professors.
Now, I'm looking here at an email that is trying to find the date. But anyway, it was sent to August 1st, 2016, Dear Custodian of Records for UNC, I'm concerned that some UNC Chapel Hill employees have been engaging in unlawful lobbying of the General Assembly under North Carolina Public Records Act. So-and-so, I demand to obtain digital copies of all electronic records that the name individuals made or received January 2016 to present day. And you name some folks there at the UNC. And apparently you have not received that information, or as of now, have you received that information?
I have not received any of that information.
Okay. And so on August 2nd, you sent another email that you had made the public request. And in that email, you say that it appears that these UNC employees have directly attempted to lobby the governor of North Carolina in their role as UNC employees, so-called mental health providers, in favor of transgender theory.
Yes.
So you were saying that they were engaging in activity that the law of North Carolina, lobbying law, prohibits them from engaging in.
Yes, yeah. It's my position, an understanding of lobbying law, that when state employees would express opinions, it's perfectly fine for them to do so in a personal and private manner as an individual, what we'd call a natural person. But there are limits in their official position when they're referring to specific laws. You know, in other words, not saying generally they like transgendered ideology, but saying specifically they want HB2 repealed, that's considered active lobbying. And that state employees can do that, but they need to be registered and go through a set lobbyist. And that would make sense because often state employees are setting their own salaries, for example.
Right.
And so I made that complaint and then later sent that specific complaint to the Attorney General-elect, Josh Stein, and I have proof that he opened that email. I use techniques that allow you to do this. As I might have mentioned, I went to MIT and did a lot of work in computer science there. That complaint had been received by the Attorney General-elect, and this was in December after he was elected, but I've not received any response to that complaint.
Okay, now I'm following along here, and September 21st, looks like you still had, at that time, not received anything. So this email was sent to Open Government at NC Department of Justice. Noelle Talley, who at that time was the, the public relations person for Attorney General Stein. And you copied in a whole bunch of people, folks at the General Assembly. And it says, I'd like to make a formal complaint and request the Attorney General's Open Government Unit for assistance to rapidly resolve the following matter. I've made several requests for public records relating to emails, et cetera. And you list folks from the General Assembly who you would like to have public records from as well. And you go on to mention that you've gotten zero cooperation. And so you also say that you will be planning to file an action in Superior Court related to this. Since that email was written in September and it's now April, did you ever file an action in Superior Court?
No, I still intend to. I have not. The NCDOJ did have an attorney call me based upon those emails that you referred to.
Right.
And they informed me on the phone. And I asked them to put it in writing. They would not. But they essentially said that it was their position that, yes, the records would have to be turned over to me, but that I would have to go basically to Superior Court, that there was very little teeth in the law as it's written. In other words, if you don't give someone public records, there's nothing you can really do except sue them in a Superior Court. And so if you've been involved with this law much, I mean, this happens all the time. People request information, it's never given to them because most people aren't going to spend the time to, you know, the filing fee, and then you got to figure out where the person lives and, you know, serve them. You know, it becomes a quite complicated process just to serve it all.
So, just to be clear, here we are April the 5th, and you still have not received the records that you have requested.
That's correct. I will say one senator, I think it was Senator Jackson, I remember, did send me the information, and I really do appreciate him for doing that. I think it's Darren Jackson, if I remember correctly. But I really do appreciate his cooperation. But he was the only one that has sent any information.
Yeah, so Representative Jackson in the House is who you're referring to?
I don't remember. I think he might have been I'm not sure whether he was in the House or Senate.
Yeah. You've got Darren Jackson on the list,
yeah.
So he's in the House.
That's his name, yes.
Okay, so why do you think they're not fulfilling your request?
I would imagine, I mean, it was one of my ideas in this, a way that I could try to affect this debate, was to find out who was pushing for transgendered ideology and then trying to contact them to explain some counterarguments to them. I mean, for example, one of the people I often quote is the past chairman of the Johns Hopkins University Psychiatry Department, as well as like the United Nations, their own World Health Organization considers transgendered practice to be a type of mental illness. And so I was trying to reach out to some of these people that are pushing it and say, hey, are you aware of the World Health Organization's position? Are you aware of the head of Johns Hopkins Psychiatry Department's position on this? Because these are counter to the narrative that's often put out in the press.
So obviously they were not really wanting to hear about that, I guess.
No. It's been pretty amazing. I mean, when you bring up, you know, these points about the World Health Organization's position and the head of Johns Hopkins, and I mentioned Johns Hopkins specifically because that is where transgendered sex changes originated, the first place in the world they ever performed. And this psychiatry professor had done all the follow-ups, and he had the entire surgical program shut down due to the high suicide rates and follow-ups.
Wow.
They had about a 200... It's a 20 times suicide rate based on the post-operatives on long-term follow-ups. And he said, it's a good point, he said, what kind of cure results in a 20 times suicide rates?
Wow, that's incredible. Now, so I'm noticing through the emails that in addition to these requests for public documents, you begin to send to the three employees at UNC some of this information that you just referred to about the veracity of the whole transgender ideology and whether or not it's legitimate. And so I guess they didn't really want to keep receiving emails from you.
No, I mean, as I say, I mean, I am pretty good at arguing with professors, and I think some of these guys got on their nerves, and I ended up being served with a cease and desist letter from the UNC Chapel Hill police, and this is going to be one of the big points of this or of this criminal lawsuit and then the following federal tort, because what the prosecutors are now arguing is essentially they agree that all of my emails are what's called protected speech based on political, religious views. But they are arguing that once they serve a cease and desist order saying don't contact certain people, that is a type of speech, the right to be in silence, the right not to receive my speech. And they would look at some case precedent that relates to geography, and this kind of makes sense in physical spaces where you might have, you know, Republicans over on one side of the park and you know, Bernie supporters on the left side of the park, so that you don't have a riot.
Right.
And the prosecutors are kind of saying we want to take this theory into cyberspace and say that the state has a right to make these decisions of where people move about, and the UNC police has said don't contact these people anymore, that they want to be in silence. This is their kind of private, you know, safe space in the internet, and don't mess with them anymore. My objection to that communication, of course, this wasn't, now we have all these constitutional, you know, experts getting involved in this case, but I would point out that the UNC's cease and desist letter never mentioned any specific victims. It just says don't contact anyone at UNC, which is extremely broad, because my spiritual, one of my spiritual directors is at UNC. My son's godfather is a professor at UNC.
Uh-huh.
So it was a very broad statement that I would say would be impossible for me to fulfill.
Yeah. So just being honest, Napier, and our guest is Napier Fuller, who was arrested for sending emails to some folks in state government and over at UNC, I guess.
To be specific, the complaints were from Terry Phoenix, who's the director of the LGBTQ Center at UNC Chapel Hill, and Professor Zerdin, who's the dean of the UNC School of Social Work. Those are the two complainants.
Okay. So you were emailing them?
Yes.
Okay. So it looks like your emails at some point in time went from being merely requests for public information to an all-out, you know, assault on the whole transgender ideology. And some of them, candidly, I'm not being critical, but
sure,
they're somewhat graphic, and I could imagine that somebody receiving these might be, you know, a little concerned in terms of...
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's a public record that I've sent these emails. I've turned all these over. So yeah, some of them are quite biting. I would say quite satirical. And I would, you know, point out as someone that does a lot of work on campaigns and new media, that I'm trying to make them, you know, exciting, get people talking, get this to be kind of the kind of emails that people are going to forward on to others, to get people talking at the water cooler. So they're definitely using the vernacular of our time. They're not all very academic. I mean, and certainly they started out being very academic, but obviously that approach wasn't leading anywhere, you know, asking for information. But yeah, I definitely turned it up a notch in what I would call a, you know, I forget the names of these daytime talk shows where they throw the chairs at each other.
Yeah.
I think the Mari Povich show.
Jerry Springer.
Yeah, Jerry Springer show, yeah. So I was trying to bring some of the Jerry Springer, you know, kind of excitement to this debate.
So you've also got in here a letter, University School of Social Work, a statement regarding House Bill 2, signed by a whole bunch of employees basically denouncing House Bill 2. That seems a little inappropriate that state employees, I guess, would be getting involved in that sort of letter writing. I don't know if that okay or not.
Yeah. I mean, that was what I was referring to in the 17-page petition. I think it becomes, yeah, very bothersome that you would have one department to be able to put together pretty much everyone in the entire department, from my understanding, sign that. And it would certainly seem to be there would be a great pressure. You know, for example, if I was in that department as a Catholic to sign the letter, since the dean and everyone in the leadership had signed it, as well as most all of the students. So I think these things become, you know, a bit dangerous, as well as in researching the UNC LGBTQ Center, they have a similar 85-page petition of all the people that have taken their Safe Spaces training class, which is basically a membership list of everyone that supports them, which is available for anyone to look at, in other words, like for promotions and things like that.
So I'm looking here now at the cease and desist letter that dated January 25th, and this came to you from investigator Ross Barbie, saying that you're free to use their facilities, you can use the regular mail, but you can't email students or faculty at Carolina. So at that point, did you stop or did you continue?
No, I immediately wrote him back and pointed out that the law that he referenced, and I think a lot of this relates to how you open PDF files, because in looking at the way that this is shown in the PDF, you read, yeah, it's definitely against the law, just in harassing or annoying emails. But if you flip the page to the next one, so a little phrase that's really important at the very end, it says, nothing in the above section shall limit constitutionally protected free speech. So I said, well, of course, it's constitutionally protected free speech. And he never replied to that. So that's why I'm going to have a pretty strong federal tort case here, because I communicated this before the arrest. So there's no excuse to say we were acting, you know, in color of the law. Maybe we made a mistake. So I would say I made it very clear to them that my conduct was perfectly lawful, and they willfully ignored that and proceeded with a false arrest that I would argue was malicious, based essentially on trying to use the criminal justice system to extract a political end.
Yeah, so we do have a cyber stalking statute, but I wasn't aware that it could be applied to, you know, annoying emails. I mean, I get annoyed at spam, so does that mean I'm being cyber stalked, you know, by people emailing me wanting me to, you know, check out their dating sites or, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point. Another confusing thing is, well, I've been over that statute a million times, and this is a federal statute that's a lot better written, but the North Carolina statute doesn't specify who decides annoying and harassment, because it can either be, in the federal statute, you have to show that the sender knows that he's being harassing and annoying. And then there's another way you could say, well, is it a reasonable person looking at this would consider the behavior, or is it the recipient's position? And so we're not really clear in the North Carolina statute who exactly is annoyed here, because as you point out, if it's the recipient that decides, well, then that opens up almost everyone that receives email to start filing criminal proceedings on cyber stalking.
Yeah, so tell us what happens next, Napier. You're going to go to court?
Yes.
Or
so this case is very bizarre, and there's a whole side story I won't even get into about illegal search warrants. But anyway, there's some pretty sensational things that are going to come out about that. But I'll just say that all of the evidence that Inspector Barbie has gathered has all been thrown out of court. The only issue at this point, I've turned over all the emails to the prosecutors. They all agree that they're all constantly protected free speech. The question now is the limits of that speech in this concept called the Castle Doctrine, that possibly you might be at home. And this would make sense if you're at home. For instance, if someone is protesting outside your window day after day, that could be annoying. So we're going to debate this on April 24th at 2 p.m. in the Orange County Courthouse. We're going to have some oral arguments on the constitutional aspects. We'll have an expert, providing information on this. But there's never been a case like this in the United States, so it's setting the precedent. And so we've got tons of different, case precedents that the DA's put forth, and we got to respond to those.
So you're representing yourself, am I correct?
No. I have attorneys in this. Yes, I'm represented primarily by Don Dickerson of Orange County, but I also will have an expert in constitutional free speech that will be providing the specific brief on this matter.
Okay. I thought I had seen somewhere in the emails that you had said you were representing yourself.
I will probably represent myself pro se in the federal tort, or what would be termed more specifically is having attorneys in limited scope, meaning I will have people advising me, but they might be out of state, and not NC Bar certified.
Now, are you concerned at all? I mean, you don't sound concerned like a guy who, has a court case ahead of him. Are you worried at all that you might go to jail?
Well, I've already been to jail on this. It's been an afternoon in jail, but
wow.
I am confident that we will win this. It might end up in Superior Court, but you'd have to have a jury of 12 find unanimously, and I don't think that's going to happen. I do think, due to the importance of this case and setting precedent, it could drag out for a while and could be appealed a number of times by the DA. Just to get things in the record, So we will see. But I think I'll definitely win. It's just going to take a while and cost some money, but that's fine.
So as we wind this up, and Napier, I really appreciate you coming on the show and explaining all this. It just, to me, sounds very bizarre that you would be arrested, handcuffed, taken to jail, booked, have your mugshot released to the public, all because you were emailing. I mean, I worked.
It's very strange, and I've asked my attorneys feel that this is being pushed at the highest levels at UNC, probably coming out of the head counts, the vice chancellor, Mark Merritt's office. He's the counsel. And another interesting thing, I'm sure you know, Tom Goolsbee has been advising me to some degree on this in a more reserved capacity. But he is on the board of UNC governors. And so it's a very interesting case.
And lost in all of this, I guess, is initially it was three employees, I believe, who you were seeking records on. Is that right? For possibly violating lobby laws?
Yes.
But this HB2 letter that you've included in the stuff that you sent me has got probably 50 or 60 or more signatories. So are they all also possibly guilty of lobbying, or is it okay to send a letter and sign it?
It's my understanding that they would need to be state employees. Some of the people that signed that 17-page letter are students.
Okay.
And to give the benefit of the doubt, I was really focusing on the people that organized that signature effort as being the primary lobbyists, not necessarily people that just signed it, the water cooler.
Right.
Had no idea what was going on.
Now, I worked down there at the General Assembly for 4 years, Napier, and I would think that there would have been someone sympathetic to your efforts to get these public records, and perhaps you could have reached out to one of the representatives or senators and said, look, I need some help here. And I found that often things went a little quicker when it carried the weight of a elected official behind it. Did you try to get anybody from the General Assembly
to help you? You bring up a good point. I was a Senate page, so I've actually worked in the NCGA myself. But you bring up a good point in that the electronic records would be stored somewhere there. But I'd have been a little more expansive and wanted the Facebook stuff. So many of these politicians are using Facebook to communicate with constituents, and so those records would not be held by the state. And I've actually had some conversations, and this gets really annoying, where the senator just deletes them all.
Yeah.
In his own HB2, because I'm quite articulate. I've kind of put them in a position they can't respond to, and all of a sudden the conversations are gone, and I'm blocked from the site.
Yeah.
And that's what got me irritated, because it was the NC DOJ considers Facebook politicians' communications to be public records. Absolutely they do. They've put out briefs on that. And so getting that requires you contacting that person directly and not the NCGA, the NCGA's computer group.
Right. I was just thinking, if you found someone who was sympathetic to your cause, you could have them, reach out to UNC about the three employees for those public
records.
That's
a very good idea, and I think I will follow that up with that's a great idea, Mark. I appreciate that.
Well, Napier, we appreciate you coming on the show, and it's, I think, pretty bizarre that here in America, where we have freedom of speech, that you would be treated by being handcuffed and arrested and all of that, and hopefully this case will be resolved in a manner that we will see the Constitution being respected as it should be here in our country.
Sure. I appreciate your concern, and I will keep you informed after this April 24th court appearance.
Well, a lot to absorb and follow along with. I think we kind of took a fork in the road there at some point where Napier, originally, this whole thing was sending requests for public records to UNC, and apparently they did not comply, still haven't complied, which, I don't understand that, by the way. And then being someone who's engaged in, I guess I'm part of the media. Oh my gosh. You know, I've made records requests and typically found that people I've requested things from have complied, although not as quickly sometimes as you like. But apparently these folks have not complied. And this has been going on since, I guess, last August. And then so we have that. But then on the other hand, he began to send emails to various faculty and others at UNC that were about transgenderism, refuting transgender ideology. Some of the emails, I'll be honest with you, they were quite graphic and somewhat disturbing, and I could understand how people might not want to receive them, but still, I do not think that Napier Fuller should have been, you know, treated as if he were a violent criminal. Multiple sheriffs, guns drawn. And again, I'm not criticizing law enforcement. I don't know their protocol. Maybe they were doing exactly what they were supposed to do. But we have freedom of speech in this country. And folks, people are allowed to say whatever they want against people of faith, against conservatives, against people who appreciate and enjoy morality and virtue and family values and things that this country was built upon. But don't you dare question things on the left, like the transgender lifestyle, which, by the way, has not been, you know, really authenticated medically by many psychologists and psychiatrists included in these emails that Mr. Fuller sent me copies of. You know, as he heard folks at Johns Hopkins taking a different stance, American Academy, I think he said, of child psychologists or psychiatrists, whatever it was, talking, some of the material says they call transgenderism child abuse, raising your child that way. And it's been proven that if you let a kid just be a kid and grow up, they'll grow out of that notion that maybe they want to, you know, a guy wants to play with dolls or whatever. But parents that are encouraging this thing, well, some in the medical community have called this abusive. So, but what I don't understand is why the folks in the General Assembly and others don't listen to those things. But instead, all they hear is the loud voices of the left demanding that something that hasn't even been fully accepted yet be given the same level of civil rights as race. You know why? It's because their voices are louder and they're well-funded. And this is why, you know, we're here telling you guys the truth, hopefully getting the message out to people that all this stuff is going on while we're all living our lives and working and having a good time and worried about our kids and are they going to be able to go to college. And there's people out there that want to change the agenda completely, change the way people view things, change the very foundations upon which this country has been built. Now, I don't know if, you know, I would have wanted Napier Fuller sending me these emails, okay? A lot of them are graphic. But I certainly don't think he should go to jail because of it or have been arrested for exercising his right to freedom of speech. I don't think what he was doing is cyber stalking, at least not the way I understand it. Anyway, fascinating stuff. I hope you enjoyed it. A little lengthy, but wow, fascinating case right here in North Carolina. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another great episode, another great edition of What Matters in North Carolina.